Great question. The Mercy Ship website states that a ship is the most efficient platform for bringing a state-of-the-art hospital to regions where clean water, electricity, medical facilities, and trained personnel are limited or non-existent. And because more than 50% of the world's population lives within 100 miles of the coast, the ships can reach more people who need medical care. In looking for volunteers, the charity asks, "Are you ready to transform lives? Can you volunteer to help a malnourished baby born with cleft palate, an individual struggling with a disfiguring tumor, or a crippled child? The ship needs medical teams and many other people in various roles." Touched by the mission of Mercy Ships, Ken and Mary spurred themselves into action. The ships usually require a 2 to 3 year commitment from volunteers. It is 100% volunteer based, and potential applicants are required to provide or raise their own funds to cover crew fees, insurance, transportation to and from the ship, and personal expenses. After doing some research and talking to a firsthand expert, their daughter, who served on one of the ships, Ken and Mary began saving money and taking courses to better enable them to be accepted to work on the ship once they retired. They wanted to make a difference in a global way, serving the world's neediest individuals, people who would have no health care without this ship's outreach services. This became the plan to kick off their retirement. After age 50, we often begin to think about the legacy we will leave behind. We may want to invest in the communities where we, or our children and grandchildren, live. We may have knowledge and skills we can teach to children or those who have not had the advantage of our education. There may be an institution, a cause, a social or environmental issue that we are passionate about working on. In this chapter, you will learn about how to define which cause to invest your time in. You will learn how to test drive before you commit to a particular group or organization, and how to turn your ideas about helping others into action. Making a difference comes in all shapes and sizes. Some people have a big dream, others wish to do something simpler, but all action devoted to helping others matters. When we hear about people making a difference, we tend to hear about the big things. Stories from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or how Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is giving away 99% of his Facebook shares, valued at over $45 billion during his lifetime. These people are making a gigantic difference by donating their wealth to help others. Here is an amazing story. Mohammed Yunus accomplished what most of us can't even conceive of, and he began with just a dream of helping people around the world who struggle to make a living. A Bangladeshi social entrepreneur, he started by making microloans to impoverished bamboo weavers who needed to buy tools. Not having any credit, they could not get loans from a bank. Loan sharks, who would have happily advanced them cash, charged outrageous amounts of interest. Yunus wanted to help people living in extreme poverty earn a living and improve their families' lives, and he wasn't about to let their lack of credit stop him. He saw his loans as business development funds the weavers needed to succeed. He was right. The weavers thrived. To date, he's lent over $6 billion to more than 7 million people, many of them living in remote villages around the world. One small idea about how to help a few people turned into a powerful economic engine that has made a difference in the lives of many. For his invention of and pioneering efforts in microcredit, Mohammed Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize. Most of us are not in a position to do what this man did. But that is not important. We each can and will make a difference in our own way. Most charities and nonprofits need local volunteers. Your neighbors, friends, and relatives are doing things to help others and making a difference in their own ways, usually in their own community, maybe through a church or a nonprofit in the area they care about. You can also make a difference and give back to both people and the planet. According to the annual Volunteering and Civic Life in America report, released by the Corporation for National and Community Service, 1 in 4 Americans volunteered through an organization and nearly 2/3 helped their neighbors in 2016, demonstrating that service to others continues to be a priority for millions of Americans. The organization cited that 62.6 million adults, 24.9%, volunteered through an organization in 2016. Altogether, Americans volunteered nearly 7.8 billion hours for the year. Among generations, Generation X leads with the highest volunteer rate, 28.9%, followed by baby boomers, 25.7%. Source, www.nationalservice.gov/VCLA. Love comes from pets. For people who adore their dogs and want to share them with others, pet therapy is one way to give back. It's gaining popularity with new retirees looking to do something meaningful in their community or at the nursing home where their parents may live. In fact, the publisher of this audiobook, Penguin Random House, recently did a fundraiser for the Good Dog Foundation, whose mission is to ease human suffering and promote recovery from trauma and stress by using therapy dogs. The dogs work to aid the healing process in humans and enhance their quality of life. Good Dog provides therapy dog services to people in healthcare, social service, educational, and community facilities in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts, and at disaster sites around the country. The therapy dog's work includes anti-bullying programs, working with people who have autism, and helping students develop increased empathy towards animals and each other. Good Dog teams also visit schools and libraries to work with children who are learning how to read. The dogs work in healthcare and wellness in many areas too. Learn more at thegooddogfoundation.org. A smile getter. Diane regretted the day she had to put her mom into a nursing home. Mom loved Diane's sweet little all-white Westie named Spiffy, and she begged Diane to bring the dog to see her. What started out as just following my mom's wishes has turned into a fun service project for me, notes Diane. Others may label me as crazy, but I dress up Spiffy in the cutest costumes and outfits and take her not only to see Mom, but also to visit with the other residents in her assisted living center. The residents and staff love that they can pet and hold the dog. Spiffy is always a big smile getter. Diane makes sure the dog always has a new outfit when they visit. They all love discussing the dog's clothes, she reports. Dresses, costumes, seasonal get-ups for the holidays, like her red velvet Christmas dress with a beautiful green bow. Spiffy brings smiles and some much-needed joy to the seniors she visits every week. Diane and Spiffy go to 2 other local assisted living centers and to Alzheimer's and dementia units, too. The American Kennel Club says therapy dogs like Spiffy are in high demand. Although dogs give us unconditional love, not all dogs are a good fit for therapy work. What makes a good therapy dog? One trained to provide comfort and affection to people in a facility setting. Therapy dogs are not service dogs, which are trained to provide a specific service for a person with special needs. Therapy dog candidates should be naturally calm, friendly, and affectionate to strangers. They also need to be well-trained in basic obedience and able to easily adapt to novel noises, places, smells, and equipment. Therapy dog organizations also require the dogs to be healthy and to have regular wellness checkups and be well-groomed, clean, and brushed at the time of all visits. To get started, try the following. 1. Socialize your dog to new people, places, objects, and surfaces. 2. Enroll your dog in a therapy dog class that will prepare you both for therapeutic visits. Equipment, situations, handler preparation. Most classes include an evaluation of your dog's potential as a therapy dog at the end of the class. 3. Register with the National Therapy Dog Organization. This is highly recommended as most therapy dog organizations provide support, advice, and insurance. Preserving history. Mary was a quiet, analytical lady who, until she was 53, had a career doing data processing. By then, her kids had graduated, and she had the resources to go back to college. She got a graduate degree in library science and then worked for 14 years as a librarian. She wouldn't have left the job, but the library gave her a fairly big nudge to retire at age 69, so she did. She had no plans upon retirement and felt lost. A friend invited her to visit a Japanese garden about 20 miles away for an afternoon, and she was impressed by its beauty. While she was there, she heard that the garden needed volunteers, particularly someone to work in the archive with historical materials about the garden and the family who started it. Mary says, "I felt strongly that people need to know why this garden is even here. History should be written down." She signed up to become the garden's archivist, developing the collection of historical documents and maintaining that information online. "I wanted to be in charge of the archives," Mary says. "My volunteer job began by receiving boxes of papers, news clippings, and some information that I needed to make sense of and to recreate the history. I've enjoyed it. The work is meaningful and rewarding. Others will know about this special place and where it came from." Mary pointed out that many historical nonprofits cannot afford to hire an archivist. So if you like history, detective work, and organizing and piecing things together, work like this might be a good fit for you and your talents. Lending a hand. "I was at a loss when I was not a pilot anymore," explains Larry, who at age 60 was forced to retire from United Airlines because of the FAA and the company's mandatory retirement age. He didn't really do much for the first year or two. One day, Christopher Schur, a Kenyan pastor, came to Larry's church and spoke about his community's needs. Larry was moved by Mr. Schur's stories of what life was like in a small African community, Kodera. "When that pastor told us that 50% of mothers and babies were dying in childbirth, it got my attention. The community had lost 3,000 people in 3 years. And they had no idea why these people were dying." Christopher Schur asked for the U.S. Church's assistance. Kodera is a very remote community with no paved roads or basic hygienic infrastructure and no school or community gathering places. Larry wondered if he could help. After talking to people in his church, he organized a trip. A group of three doctors and a couple of nurses volunteered to go on the first trip to work with the community. The group arrived and quickly saw numerous issues. The immediate need was to obtain a clean water supply and build artesian wells. Additionally, they needed to teach the people in the community things like the importance of washing their hands and the need for real latrines. Allowing the community to get clean water would solve many serious health issues. Larry says, "Our American doctors were astounded because they saw things they had only seen in their medical textbooks. There just was so much to do and so many ways we could help." Larry had found his new passion. Over the next 16 years, Larry and his wife Priscilla worked to support this Kenyan community. The first big project was raising money to build a health clinic. On the day the clinic opened, staffed by a Kenyan medical team, 1,000 people waited in line. For most, it was the first time they ever received health care assistance. Back home, Larry and Priscilla actively raised funds to help support this community. The next goal was to obtain a grant to build a unique elementary school for boys and girls. The community was so poor there was no formal education. So, working collaboratively, the American church raised the money and the Kenyans did the labor with support from the U.S. team that would come once or twice a year to provide necessary project management, training, and leadership. The children who now attend this new school, Pine Lake Academy, do so via a sponsorship system. Priscilla explains, a person in the community or church member sponsors one child for a year at the school. That financial donation gets the Kenyan child two meals a day, textbooks, equipment, supplies, and it helps cover the teacher's salary. No administrative money is taken from that donation. It all goes directly to running the school. I was so moved by the endeavor, I sponsored a young girl named Frontia. In 2006, the school took in its first preschool class. Now more than 100 students have graduated and gone on to high school. These kids would never have had this educational opportunity without the work that Priscilla and Larry, age 75 and 81 respectively, have championed. They remain devoted to continuing to help this cause. Many places of worship have volunteer opportunities to help others less fortunate. This couple made a difference for a tiny remote African village. What is your church involved in? Maybe there is a way you can join in and help out, or maybe you can start something like Larry did. Baby needs a beanie. A retired school teacher, Betty used to volunteer in the local hospital every week. Once she hit 80, she had a harder time standing for longer periods and regrettably had to leave that job. She has, however, spent the last 11 years, she is currently 91, knitting hats for the newborn infants in that local hospital. Betty says, I have to be productive, and I've always helped others. I love to knit, and I've made a hat for many babies that are the grandchildren of my former students. I knit blue hats for boys and pink beanies for the baby girls. As I don't drive anymore, my daughter delivers the hats to the hospital weekly. This project keeps me busy in a positive and happy way. I can envision the new infant wearing my hat. It means a lot to me that even at my age, I can still volunteer and do something worthwhile. If you can't get out, think about what type of volunteer work you could do from home. You might make things like pillows or clothes, do mailing services for soldiers, put together care packages, etc. There are many needed ways to contribute. Helping out. Jerry left the boredom of his couch for work pounding nails and offering leadership skills to build a home for a family. His work with Habitat for Humanity has given his life renewed meaning. I was wasting away. I saw the ad for Habitat on TV one day and said to myself, I need to check that out. Maybe they are doing something here. They sure were. Working there and making new friends, as I did, has been a major life-shaping turnaround for me. I'm so glad for this volunteer job that I'm constantly trying to recruit others to come and help on one of our housing projects, he tells me. Helen, age 63, has an aging mom who, because she has Alzheimer's, is in an assisted living home. One day I dropped by very unexpected, Helen explains. I discovered the caregivers had chemically subdued my mom and were neglecting her care. Mom stunk from not having had her diaper changed in what must have been hours. Appalled that this could happen, Helen immediately moved her mother. She reported the abuse to governmental agencies, only to learn that abuse of the elderly is a genuine and common problem. That propelled her to start an organization that advocates for the elderly. Helen writes and calls politicians, urging state and federal agencies to more forcibly regulate and help weed out bad elderly care facilities. Frustrated with the meager results, she turned to the media to bring attention to this problem. She wrote articles and opinion pieces for newspapers. She went to her state capital and has even organized a few demonstrations. "I have found my mission," Helen says. "I have to stop caregivers from stealing the elderly's medicines and reselling them on the black market. That is happening too much, and the poor, defenseless elder person suffers." Hard to believe this is happening across the United States at nursing and elder care facilities and homes? Well, it is. My goal is to bring attention to the problem and get it stopped every place I can. Yes, she really is a lady with a mission. Quite a change from the work she did as a systems analyst during her professional career. Advocating for a cause you care about is a good way to make a difference, especially if you can drum up interest for solving the problem. Helping to preserve the dignity and basic human rights of the elderly will become a larger and growing need as our population ages. Help a veteran. Walt is a tall man who suffers from nerve pain in his back. He worked for the FAA after his military career, but by age 61, the back pain was too severe to work anymore, so he was forced to retire. He was looking for some classes to take to fill up the new retirement hours when he heard about a friendship program for vets. That program asked volunteers to provide a few hours of companionship a week and to do errands for a disabled or elderly veteran. Walt contacted this group and signed up for its training program. He found this an easy way to give back and says he loves being helpful. He has become friends with the man he was assigned to, and now Walt tells him to call any time he needs something. Walt sees this vet two or three times a week, and the vet tells everyone, "Walt is my only friend." What a powerful difference Walt has made in this man's life. Jean had been her family seamstress all her life, on top of her other work duties. She made clothes for her two daughters, even their doll clothes. With the family grown and gone, she volunteered at the VA hospital in Leavenworth, Kansas, at a shop on the property where veterans can get clothing as they approach discharge. Every Friday for 10 years, Jean has worked in this shop. She says vets come into the store in serious need of clothing. Of course, many times the donated item doesn't fit properly. So when the pants are too long or other alterations are needed, I tell the vet, "I'll alter it for you. Come in next Friday and it'll all be done." Jean takes the items home and puts her sewing skills to work once again. She does this at no charge. She also enjoys knitting and has made scarf and hat sets to give to veterans as well. Jean is really proud to be able to help the vets out. She often tells her two adult daughters about the people she is meeting. On her birthday, holidays, and just because days, her two daughters mail her a box of new men's underwear and socks in a variety of sizes with a note explaining, "We know you don't need anything yourself, and these are items rarely donated to the VA hospital shop. We're sure you will see that they find good homes." Not only do her daughters show their support for Mom's volunteer work by doing this, but Mom gets a chance to brag about her thoughtful daughters when she comes in with a donation of brand new items. If someone in your life is volunteering and uses supplies in that work, a care package makes a great gift. Don't know what to buy? Mail a gift card for an appropriate store, like Target or Walmart, with a similar note. It's a great way to support those who are helping others. There are many opportunities to lend a hand to and show your gratitude to veterans or active service men and women. The mission of the USO is to create a better quality of life for military personnel and their families in the United States and abroad. USO volunteers help with everything from greeting troops as they return from overseas tours and making hot coffee in USO offices, to providing warm meals and warm blankets to troops on airport layovers while they're awaiting flights home. Check out volunteers.uso.org. The Veterans Administration has numerous ways you can volunteer. You can provide transportation like Walt does, help homeless vets, work on Honor Deceased Vets programs through the VA National Cemetery Administration, and be a part of Welcome Home celebrations. Find more info at www.volunteer.va.gov/programs.asp. Become a family helper. Patricia was a very healthy and active 62-year-old who had retired from her job as an administrative specialist working for a large company. Both her children had just finished college and were living in different states. She missed the hubbub of a family. She missed having teens around. She was lonely. Looking at the community paper, she saw an ad for a part-time personal assistant to help out a family. The family needed someone to be the mom, as the wife was a busy executive and single parent. Someone to cook, do laundry, walk the dog, and pick up their 10-year-old son and drive him to his sports activities. Patricia applied and was very enthusiastic in the interview. She wanted to help. The job became hers, and for nearly 2 years, she was part of a family again. She loved every second. Then her husband retired, and they moved away. Helping that family had given her a real boost in her retirement. She was sad to say goodbye, but was grateful for being needed. It had enriched her life in so many ways. You would be amazed how often families need help with getting the kids picked up at school and cared for until the parents get home from work. A lot of the job is driving the kids to activities and helping out with the family chores. Networking is the main way to get this job. Also, look at the free newspapers you might get at your home with local news inside. Inquire on neighborhood Facebook pages. Check with your local pastor, who is often told about job openings. Contact elementary school secretaries, who also often know about these types of job opportunities. Drivers needed. Before Rick retired from his manager position at the EPA, he started working on Saturdays, when he could, in a program his church ran, helping low-income or elderly people. Since he only had an occasional day to offer, the work consisted of doing errands, getting groceries, and shoveling snow. Now that he's retired, he volunteers 2 to 3 days a week and says a lot of the work is taking people to medical appointments and picking up prescriptions for them. I just want to be useful, and I have a soft heart for helping out people in need. This job is flexible, and I meet a lot of interesting people in the course of doing this work. It's quite rewarding, says Rick. Making a difference means as much to the giver as it does to those who receive. Every person I talked to said they received a lot more than they gave. You don't need a formal job opening to help out. Do you have elderly neighbors or older people at your place of worship? Offer a helping hand. Rides to the doctor and medicine refills are much needed, as Rick found out. Tour time. I'm very proud of my Chinese heritage, said Lina, a refined Chinese-American woman who worked in the high-tech world of Silicon Valley. Her parents only spoke Mandarin, so she is fluent both in it and in English. Upon retirement, she decided she wanted to do something with her culture and found the Chinese Culture Center was the ideal place. She explains, "It is a San Francisco showplace of events, especially the arts. I volunteer and give educational talks to school children who come to learn more about China, its history, culture, and people. We get people who come from all over the world, so I am always on call to conduct tours and educational workshops for groups speaking Mandarin Chinese." There are so many museums and historical centers throughout the United States that would love to have you volunteer to give tours. What place nearby would you be proud to tell others about? Bill went online to find something new to do with his grandson. He bought tickets for a Boston duck boat tour, and the two enjoyed the afternoon adventure. Bill struck up a conversation with the tour director. Those few extra minutes enabled him to learn about a cool job, being the tour guide on a duck boat. Bill had been an MBTA bus driver and was bored sitting at home. He listened intently and thought this might be a great retirement gig for himself. They needed extra drivers from May through October. The job sounded fine, so he filled out an application. "I love my job as a tour guide. Telling the tourists about Boston's favorite sites and a bit of history is just plain fun. I make a few bucks, too," he says. "The job pays $20 an hour, but," he says, "the tips are really decent, and I meet so many people from all over the world. This is a great part-time job." Guiding tours is a fun job if you have a good memory and love sharing information with people. Look around to see where you might apply if you think this is a way you'd enjoy entertaining and educating others. Take flight. An iron worker all his life, Buck was 63 when he retired from his city job. When he was young, he had been a pilot of a small seaplane, an interest that was displaced by work, family, and lack of time. After he retired, he started to think about flying. He read books and magazines to get up to date with what was happening in the aviation industry. He was very lucky because he lived in the Seattle area near the Museum of Flight and would often go to the museum to listen to speakers and check out the exhibits. "I was 72 when I joined the board for the chapter of Friends of the American Fighter Aces Association. This was a group honoring fighter pilots who had shot down at least 5 enemy aircraft in World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. Only 1,450 aces have ever existed," he says. "As I read and study about them, I find it fascinating," he notes. "I'm a quiet man with no interest in speaking in front of people simply because I'm too afraid," Buck explains. "When I was young, I tried to do it and just couldn't get up the nerve to talk in front of a small group. Once I retired, I decided to take a course that would teach me how to speak in front of groups. I was interested in becoming a docent for the Museum of Flight. That's what motivated me to overcome my anxiety about speaking in public, the desire to do that job." Buck took the public speaking course and joined a Toastmasters group so he could work on his presentation skills. This solved the problem. He then began the process of applying to be a docent. A person who acts as a guide in a museum, gallery, or zoo is often called a docent. It's typically a volunteer job. For the Museum of Flight, Buck would talk about a topic of interest, creating his own 60 to 90 minute long presentations. In his case, it was a very complicated application process, taking 3 months of effort, including memorizing a presentation and having to give it before the committee perfectly with no notes before being allowed to talk to any guests who came into the museum. Buck says, "I'm the oldest guy here. What propelled me on is that you get to pick your own favorite topic and talk about it. I did tons of research. I love to learn, and that's what you need to do this. I had to come up with all the facts and information myself and then actually create a speech. It wasn't easy, but I felt it was pretty important." For the last 3 years, Buck has been a docent at the museum, offering speeches every Friday. It's a volunteer job. "This work will keep your brain really active," he says. "I'm expected to continually learn new material. Plus the people I meet, woo-hoo. There was the 90-year-old man who helped design the Hubble telescope, Bob Alexander. And I'm super proud to say that I have personally met 21 astronauts. I sure was most impressed with meeting Jerry Ross, who I've gotten to know rather well. Jerry has spent the most hours walking in space, something like 58 or 59 hours. When I asked why he took on such a big learning adventure, Buck said, "It's to share with the public. I so enjoy meeting people who come in here. Many come from all over the world. This center is large. We have space camp and a big aviation high school that's part of this organization. The Museum of Flight is designed to educate people. We served 160,000 kids last year. I feel like I'm the least educated person working here. Most of them have master's degrees and PhDs, and I didn't even go to college. I found something that I really loved, and to me, it's really making a difference. I enjoy it and look forward to the hours I spend working on this hobby and volunteering." Buck is a great example of someone who didn't let the fact that he lacked a particular skill or a college degree keep him from doing a job he wanted. He took the courses and spent a lot of time working on developing his skills. You may need to take some courses to get ready to take on the job you want, too. Habla Español. A director of finance, Linda retired at the age of 53. She left her job after 12 years at the same governmental agency because she was bored and tired of doing the same things. She took 6 months off, not sure exactly where she was going, when she met a lady at the gym who spoke only Spanish. "There was something about her," Linda said. "I just really wanted to know her and hear her story." Unfortunately, Linda had only high school Spanish, and that wasn't enough to make a conversation. She went to the library and checked out a few books and a couple of auditory programs. Then she went online and found a site called italki.com that matches you with a native-speaking tutor. They have people who speak any language imaginable. Linda selected a certified tutor. She says the tutor cost about $20 an hour, though you can hire a hobbyist who knows the language extremely well and charges only $8 to $10 an hour. The company handles the marketing for the tutors and collects the tutoring fees and then pays the tutors. "It took me about 3 years to really learn Spanish, so I knew the language inside and out," Linda says. "I did it because it was following something I really enjoyed. And when you're following your heart, you're happy. I just knew I needed to do something that was good in my community and helping people." So now she volunteers at the local library one day a week, working with adult Spanish speakers, teaching them middle school level coursework. Many adult immigrants from Mexico and Latin America had to drop out of elementary school, but now want to pursue more education. They need to do it with someone who can speak their language, in this case, Spanish. Linda tutors individuals on computers and also in math as a part of a program called Plaza Comunitaria. She also does sessions for immigrants who want to practice their English with a native speaker. About 57 native Spanish speakers live in the United States today, and another 11.6 million people are bilingual, many of whom are the children of Spanish-speaking immigrants. Source, U.S. Census Bureau. Linda's second volunteer activity also involves Spanish. She works for United Way from January through April as a volunteer helping Spanish speakers do their tax returns. "That," she says, "is a challenge, and it is something I need because I want intellectual stimulation. I need it to survive. My advice to other people is to remain open to the options around you. Think about things you might have done in your past, even in high school, which is where I took my only Spanish classes. Consider everything and anything until something feels so right that you just want to do it every day because it makes you feel rewarded and very happy doing it." Do you speak a foreign language? Would you like to help immigrants? Check with your local library for opportunities to use your bilingual skills. About 18% of New Yorkers speak Spanish, and New Mexico has the highest Spanish-speaking population, around 47%. The states with the largest groups of Spanish speakers who do not speak English are California, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, New York, Illinois, and Colorado. The 8 most popular foreign languages in the United States. 1. Spanish. 2. Chinese. 3. Tagalog. 4. Vietnamese. 5. French. 6. German. 7. Korean. 8. Arabic. You might also consider working as a paid tutor through an online service. The largest tutoring service is Wiseant, found at www.wiseant.com. A different dinner club. Colleen had just retired from being a senior executive working for a large pharmaceutical company when she gave herself 6 months to sit back and decompress from her hard-driven life. No longer on a 24/7 work schedule, she contemplated how she could give back and make a difference. She read a book, A Path Appears, Transforming Lives, Creating Opportunity, by New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun. As a widow living in California, she decided she'd like to do something where she could meet people. She read about an organization called Dining for Women, www.diningforwomen.org, which really caught her eye. This charity is unique in how it raises money. It's a collective giving model, explains Colleen, which means although each tiny chapter only gives a small amount, when you add all those chapters' contributions together, the dollars sure add up. Then the organization can make a much bigger difference. This charity works to help women in the most impoverished areas of the world, where some subsist on less than $1.25 a day. Chapters, small groups, meet on a regular basis, most monthly, and share a meal together, usually in someone's home. Colleen says, "It was easy. I organize a potluck, and everyone brings something to share for the meal." The charity then asks those in attendance to write a check at the end of the night in the amount they would have spent if they'd gone out to dinner. Checks are usually small, averaging about $35. They are written to the charity, and I collect them and send them in. We also spend a brief time discussing the monthly cause or group our dollars will support. Sometimes the national organization sends a video or educational documents or presentations. We can see exactly who we are helping. I think it's an ideal way to combine a social cause with socializing and meeting some very good people. The Dining for Women website says, "We don't just give money, we invest in futures." The organizations and projects we support educate girls, teach women a skill, help develop markets for their products, and fight the prevalent gender inequality in the world. We give a hand up, not a hand out. Colleen loved the whole concept of funding grassroots projects in healthcare, agriculture, economic and environmental sustainability, safety and security, leadership, and education. She checked out the membership, but found no group in her small city. Her solution? She started a new chapter. She invited a few ladies she thought would like the concept and asked them to each bring a friend. That's how she opened this new avenue to start giving back. It's great to join in with efforts that are already in place, but you may find that you need to start something just like Colleen did. Whether it's a charity, group meeting, or community park renovation, you can find like-minded others to join in, spread the word, and help out. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. No one was looking for a 62-year-old designer who had worked in the motion picture and TV department of a very large manufacturing company when I was laid off, says Jim. I looked for another job, but all I heard was no. The economy was bad, they didn't want to hire old people, they wanted somebody younger, and I was too expensive. Yeah, I got all the excuses, but what I didn't get was the new job. So I decided it was time to retire and do some things I didn't have time to do before. Jim enjoyed hiking, and he worked on a major home remodeling project. FYI, remodeling and other home projects seem to be the first thing men want to do when they retire. One spring day, Jim went to a park he used to go to as a child. When he got there, he noticed that the rope swing had been taken down, apparently too much of a liability. He sat there and reminisced about his childhood. I thought about the rope swing and the fun we had with it when I was a kid. I felt bad that youngsters today were missing out on that. As he mulled, he got the idea that this rope swing might make a good children's book. I approached this like a major work project. As a designer, I created a storyboard. Then I took a college class on writing children's books. That course should have been called About Getting Published, as we spent more time on that topic than writing. Nonetheless, I took another class on illustrating for children. I went to work and created a children's book titled The Rope Swing. I did all the illustrations myself and created all the rhymes, says Jim. He didn't think it was possible to go through a regular publisher, so he self-published the book. He gave it to a couple of elementary teacher friends. He asked them to read it to the kids. They did, and the teachers and students loved his book. Satisfied, he went ahead and printed 500 copies and sold them by doing readings at libraries and through word of mouth. I did it all for fun because I so enjoy doing the storytelling part as well as seeing the kids' faces become interested in my book. All the money I made, I donated to charity, Jim says. I had to have something creative to do in my retirement. This has been a real blast for me. I'll probably write another children's book, but right now I'm just trying to think of ways I can sell this one. But most important, I just enjoy doing the readings and seeing the little faces enjoy the story. Are you a writer? Do you want to publish a book? Is there a novel in you dying to come out? There are many creative writing courses out there to try out. I recommend you begin by just writing. You can write about experiences, people you know, anything to get the juices flowing. Then, if a book is really the goal, do your research because the first thing you need to decide is whether you plan to self-publish or find a real publisher. Once you make that decision, you need to learn everything you can about the option. Talk to authors and learn the pros and cons. Then decide on your subject, create your outline, and get to writing. Blogs, conversational-style websites run by you or others are popular. Is that how you want to write about a subject you love and share your opinions with others? It usually takes quite a while to attract a following, so consistency and patience are key here. Opportunities sometimes knock very loudly, said Marcia, who was working for the Social Security Administration as a public affairs specialist. I had become passionate about issues surrounding women and their money. I was responsible for women's issues, which provided me the opportunity to attend many financial conferences for women. I also spoke to women's groups about the importance of Social Security and also having pensions and savings to ensure a financially secure retirement. I was sailing along when I got moved into a new area, and I was no longer happy or satisfied with my job. I spent a lot of days miserable and thought of retiring, but it just wasn't sensible to retire before I turned 55, which was 8 years away. So I kept going to work, miserable and unhappy. That went on for a few months, Marcia continues, and it was one night, crying on the commute home, that I finally decided I was done. So I retired at age 47. Leaving was the best thing I ever did. I opened up a nonprofit called Money Wise Women. And over the next 11 years, I became an event planner, something I've never done before. I would organize conferences about money for women and bring in expert speakers to talk to them. Over the course of the time I had this nonprofit open, we put on 70 conferences in 5 different states. We did not charge for our conferences. I still get emails and letters from women telling me how much learning about how to manage their own money changed their lives. It was very rewarding to know that I was making such a difference. Last year, Marcia held the last conference, and now at age 61, she's thinking about what her next project is going to be. It'll surely center on making a difference in the lives of others, she said. Marcia's story shows that you may find yourself doing something for a long while, and it then runs its course. There is nothing wrong with leaving it behind and moving on. After all, there are so many things you can do. If you lose that passion, move on to something else. Focus on others. Marilyn and her husband spend one day a week working at the food bank. Most people would think it's very unrewarding for two high-powered former execs to unpack boxes, sweep floors, help clients get food, and pull all the old food and throw it away. It doesn't sound exciting at all. We both find working here to be very helpful to others, Marilyn says. We like the people we work with. Most important, I get a wonderful feeling inside when I hand a client a box of food to take home, knowing that at least that person won't go hungry tonight. Food banks are everywhere. They need a large number of volunteers, and the work is easy, but as Marilyn says, important. When Deb took early retirement from her administrative job at the factory, she suddenly had a lot of time on her hands and planned to use some of it to help take care of her aging parents. She told me, "The one thing I miss most in my life is being with children. My own two are grown and live far away. I don't have any grandchildren yet. So I was thinking about what I could do. I did some investigating and went to the library to do some research, but I just couldn't seem to think of what might enrich my life. Her friend recommended she consult with me. As we spoke, she said, I don't know what's available in my area, but I'd really like to do something with children. I just can't seem to figure out what. I don't have a college degree, so working in the schools is out. Do you have any ideas? By the end of one session, we had decided that being a substitute aide at her local elementary schools might be a good position to try out. She knew the secretary to the superintendent because she lives in a very small town. Deb contacted her and filled out the application. Weeks went by. Then she got a call. The secretary said, "Deb, one of our aides is going out on maternity leave. You are the first one I contacted to be a sub. She is the aide to a special needs child in a regular classroom. Do you think you could do that?" Thrilled, Deb said yes. She sailed through the interview and landed the job. "I took the job and it's been incredibly rewarding. I'm making a lot of new friends with the teachers and parents I meet. Some I know, but many I didn't," Deb reports. "I'm really surprised that my retirement is a lot more fun and exciting than my professional life used to be. This new job working with children has really enriched me in ways that I could not have even imagined before I retired." It may take you a while to figure out what type of job is a good fit for you. Explore, do some research, and if necessary, reach out to a career counselor for a session or two. A former flight attendant for a major airline, Vicky was a very elegant 62-year-old who no longer worked. She had a big heart and even while working and raising her son did a lot of volunteering. The airline dangled a golden parachute and it was too good to say no to. "But me, I love being extremely busy. If I'm not, I get very unhappy quickly," says Vicky. That meant she had to find some worthy causes and projects to devote her time to. She had done some volunteer work at the Hospital Guild, raising funds for uncompensated care. She worked on numerous fundraisers for them, including a 5K run, an online wine auction, and had even recruited live auction items for the big annual fundraising event. "I had never raised money before, but I was really successful getting people to make donations for the hospital's fund. Vicky explains. It's all just talking to people and networking. Her efforts got her placed on the hospital foundation board. That was a big coup and also a bigger commitment that involves offering guidance and direction, and it has been rewarding but somewhat time-consuming too. Her response, I couldn't be happier. Every charity, college, and many schools have fundraisers. They all need volunteers to work behind the scenes. Just pick up the phone and call one. Need a suggestion? Check for the local chapter of these large national charities. Salvation Army, Boys and Girls Clubs of America, Goodwill, World Vision, American Cancer Society, Nature Conservancy, American Red Cross, American Heart Association, Breast Cancer Research Foundation. Do you listen to NPR? Do you watch PBS? If so, then you are probably familiar with their pledge programs. David and his wife always listen to NPR. We love the NPR station, says David. That is why we are frequent volunteers for NPR's pledge drive and answering the phones when donors call in. My wife was a sales rep, so she is extra talented at getting callers to up their donation to the next level. The fundraising chair just loves my wife. The couple says they enjoy the people they meet from the radio station, and the volunteers are great too. Want to help out? It's easy. Find your local NPR or PBS station and go to their volunteer sign-up page, and then show up. Oh, yes, you need to answer the phone in a nice customer service manner, too. Oh, those smiling faces. Angela was a secretary who enjoyed taking out books from the library. She'd been a reader most of her life. She retired at age 63 and was at the library one day talking to the main librarian when she noticed a children's circle and somebody reading the kids a story. She said, I wish I had become a children's librarian. I would love to do that job, pointing to the person reading the book. The librarian told her, that's a volunteer. You could do that if you wanted to. So Angela signed up to become a storytime reader. She put a lot of thought into it and for her first assignment, picked her book on Thanksgiving and dressed appropriately as a pilgrim. The kids loved that she was in costume and could act out the story. From that day forward, Angela spent her time going to places like Goodwill and the Salvation Army, looking for costumes to go along with the books she wanted to read to the kids. She always goes in a costume that matches the storyline. This is the best job ever. I have more fun than they do. I just love acting out and being a real storyteller, she says. Dan goes to school almost every day from September until the end of May. That's where he volunteers. He's in his early 60s and lives in a wealthy suburb, but that is not where he goes to share his expertise. He picked a poor school district in the city and contacted the science and math teachers via email to see if anyone wanted a smart engineer who could teach, mentor, or tutor kids in math or science. Wow, was he shocked when each teacher begged him to come in. He wrote me about his experience. Robin, these lower-income schools need the most help because they don't have parental support. You see, most of the kids don't have highly educated parents. I work as a tutor and math helper for the advanced kids. I find I don't have the patience the teacher does for the slow math learners. She was thrilled that I could help her smart kids move ahead. I found some kids who love math, so I've started a math club. We have 37 members, and we meet every week, and I teach advanced math. We are going to enter the state math competition for high schools, the first time this school has ever entered. I also advise my kids, as I refer to them, about work opportunities and colleges. I have helped them with college applications and have had a few go on to get scholarships so they could attend college. I'm only one guy. Wish I was 10. I come to this school because here I am truly making a difference. and I think I may have recruited another math helper for the low-level kids. I think nothing I've done has mattered quite like the work I do here as a volunteer retiree. Dan took his time when he started helping out. He listened to what the teacher needed help with and what the kids might need help with.